Welcome to the God is the Issue podcast with Brad Bright. I'm your host, Jim Brangenberg. Think about it. Our view of God determines what we think on all moral, cultural, and economic issues. It even determines how we vote. Hope for the future of our country and our world lies in our ability to make God the issue in every issue. You know, recently, we recorded a podcast entitled, Is It a Sin Not to Not Vote? Where we focus on Matthew 25, that as a steward of your God-given vote, it is a sin to bury it in the ground rather than invest it. We also touched on how to vote wisely. So this is the follow-up to the podcast expanding on the question, how to vote wisely. It's not designed to tell you who to vote for or what political party to support. The goal is to pass on practical information to help you more wisely invest the vote God gave you. This is part two of a two-part podcast series entitled How to Vote Wisely. Brad Bright is here to continue parsing out all the details. Brad Bright, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Jim, for being here, and I guess we're still parsing today, okay?
We are. We're still parsing. Well, there's a lot of stuff to go through here. All right, so let's just remind the listeners why we're talking about how to vote wisely. What's at stake here?
Oh, I'd say religious freedom, freedom of speech, the lives of millions of unborn children, the future of our entire educational system, the rule of law, and even justice itself, the future of the republic, and most of all, the freedom to preach the gospel.
That's quite a list. Wow.
All of them are at stake. I mean, you literally look at the process and you say, these are all at stake.
Makes me want to start singing that song, The End of the World as We Know It. All right. So, Brad, on last week's podcast, we finished up with you listing six voting criteria that should be used in considering if we should vote for a particular candidate. What were those six?
The first is integrity. You know, do they have integrity? And there I didn't talk about truth tellers versus liars. It was truth tellers versus truth benders. Those folks who technically may be correct, but they're trying to mislead you. Then there's track record. We said the past behavior is the best predictor of future behavior. Then associates, that is, you know, the saying, birds of a feather flock together. Or when it comes to employees, personnel is policy. Who they hire will determine what actually happens. And then money. Money is a huge influence in politics. So you follow the money. Who did they give to? Who's given to them? Endorsements. Who have they endorsed? Who has endorsed them? And finally, words. But I put words at the bottom of the list because it's the last thing you want to look at if you look at it all, because actions speak louder than words. Mm.
And those are practical criteria. And I encourage you, if you missed last week's podcast, go back and listen to it to hear the details for each one of those six. Brad, is there anything else you think we should consider when evaluating political candidates?
As I just touched on at the end of the last podcast, job description. Look at the job description of what the candidate is applying for. What job are they applying for? And therefore, what are they going to be doing? That should make a difference in how you vote. That's critical, but most people don't think about that.
So, you're the first person I've ever heard say that as you consider the job description of the political candidate, because we don't usually think about that. How does job description make a difference in how you vote? Explain that further.
Well, let's just look at congressmen, senators, and the president, okay? Let's look at their job description and how that affects how you should vote. Should we get that into that right now?
Let's start with one of those. Let's look at the congressman.
Okay, let's first of all look at the job description of a congressman. Let me ask you, Jim, what does a congressman do?
They pass laws and spend your money.
That's right. They pass laws, spend your money. That's pretty much what they do. So vote based upon how you think they'll spend your money, and based on the laws you think they will support or not support. And that's pretty straightforward, right? But
yeah.
Now let's look at United States Senator.
Well, but in the congressman also, in today's, there's so much politics involved in the passing of the laws, and it's like they don't pass a lot of budgetary laws anymore. They do this continuing resolution thing. So does that play into this job?
They do the CRs. They do the continuing resolution, so they don't have to pass a budget, so they don't have to be accountable. I mean, it's a crazy maker for me, but now both parties are kind of doing it, and I hate it. If we ran a business that way, the business would be bankrupt in no time at all. It's no wonder spending is out of line. But that is something you consider, how they spend your money or misspend your money. and the laws that they pass or support. I mean, those are critical things to look at, and you want to look at those, no doubt. But you go from there to United States Senator, and the job description changes, and it changes significantly.
And the they're there three times longer than a congressman, too.
They're there three times longer, but also they do something that a congressman doesn't do. Do you know what that is?
They confirm cabinet members for new presidents, and they confirm judges, because that was something that was so lauded in the last 4 years.
They confirm federal judges, yes.
Ah, federal judges, okay.
So let me ask you, what's the most powerful branch of government today? Is it the executive, the legislative, or the judiciary?
Go ahead. It's the judiciary.
It's the judiciary, exactly. In theory, the three branches of government are supposed to balance each other. But in modern practice, that's not how it works. The balance of power between the three branches of government is no longer balanced, because the federal courts can and do routinely tell the Congress and the Senate and the President what they can and cannot do. So, remember, when you vote for a United States Senator, you're also largely voting for unaccountable federal justices, including the Supreme Court. And these people will control your destiny and control the future of our nation. See, the federal courts are likely to decide the abortion issue, the same-sex marriage issue, the gun control issue, whether or not your daughter will be able to compete in sports, will have to compete in sports against gender-confused men, whether or not your daughter will have to share a locker room with biological males. They'll decide the future of homeschooling. They'll decide the future of free speech. They'll decide religious freedom issues. They'll decide whether or not critical race theory will be pushed on your child. Think about that. Does job description matter? I think it does.
All right. We're going to come back to this conversation about job description right after the break. This is something we need to dig deep into, because to understand the role that they're applying for, because they're applying for a job, and they got to get your vote in order to apply for this job. You're listening to Brad Bright with the God is the Issue podcast as we talk about how to vote wisely. And we're talking about paying attention to the job description. We'll be right back after this break.
Want to know more about how you can make God the issue in every issue? Get your copy of Brad's book, God is the Issue. Now in its third edition, you can get your ebook copy at brightmedia.org. Even better, if you subscribe to this podcast, you'll receive a coupon for one free download of God is the Issue ebook. Go to brightmedia.org, that's brightmedia.org, and get God is the Issue ebook today.
Welcome back to the God is the Issue podcast with Brad Bright, as we talk about how to vote wisely. And we're in part two of a two-part podcast series, and we're talking about, last podcast we talked about the six criteria that you need to consider when voting for somebody, and now we're talking about, have you looked at their job description? And Brad, you just caused me to pause when you consider that these people are applying for a job and you're the HR department and you're the interviewee. And these are things that you do to choose a good candidate for a job position, but that pays attention. We need to pay attention to what is the job that they're actually applying for. So
what it is they're asking you that to let them do. Yes. Right.
So we talked about congressmen. We've talked about senators. Talk to me about... And the senators, about the judges, the federal judges. Wow, that's something. When you put it that way, every vote for a senator is 300 votes for federal judges who will either protect your daughters.
On average, yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's a lot of people. And these judges right now are considering whether they're going to protect our daughters or not. So what about the president?
Well, it's kind of the same thing, isn't it? The president does a lot of very important things. But again, one of the things the president does is he nominates judges to federal courts. Now, let me repeat. Any federal judge can tell the president no. He can say, Mr. President, you can't do that. I'm not going to let that law go through. The courts have more power than the president of the United States. Keep that in mind. And again, on average, a president will successfully nominate 300 members to the federal bench. So every time you make one vote for president, you're voting for 300 federal justices. And if you're not aware of that, you're not voting based on their job description. So, you know, Trump successfully placed, what, 234 federal judges on the bench, including three Supreme Court justices. So when you voted for Trump, you voted in favor of 234 federal justices as well. Now then, let's look what's going on this year. As of August 8th, Biden had appointed 75 judges to the federal courts. At the same point in Trump's tenure, he had appointed 51 and Obama had appointed 42. So folks, every vote for president is a vote for hundreds of federal judges who will determine whether or not your daughter can have privacy in the bathroom, can compete against just women in women's sports. It will determine religious freedom, freedom of speech, gun control, all these things the courts at the end of the day are going to decide.
It makes your jaw drop. Something our founders probably never envisioned, that judges will have so much power. All right, so thinking in terms of one president, one vote for president is a vote for 300 federal judges that typically align with that president, who will either protect or undermine your constitutional rights. That's rather sobering, Brad. But what about state and local races? And, you know, do they matter? Those can be a lot harder to find out information about, certainly local ones. How do you figure out who to vote for in those races?
I just start looking for articles regarding those people. I mean, you can go to their websites. They usually have a website, but they're going to tell you what they want you to know on their website. So I start looking for articles, anything I can read about them, not just what their political positions, but who they are as people. Sometimes there'll be local groups who will review local candidates and they'll publish their results. You have to do a little bit of research to find it, but oftentimes it is out there. But here's the thing. If you can't find any of that, call the office of each candidate. Call them. Do not talk to the candidate. Talk to a staff member if you need to. And ask them where they stand on the issues that are most important to you. But then ask another question. Where does your opponent stand on these issues?
Wow.
You get their perspective. But don't stop there. Then call the other candidate's office and ask them the same thing. Where do you stand on these issues? Or talk to a staffer, probably. Where do you stand on these issues? And where does the other candidate stand? Now, why do you do that? I remember when I was working for Senator Armstrong, I was working on the campaign, and I got a call for one day, and a guy said, I'm so-and-so, and I'm strongly pro-life, and I just talked to Carlos Lucero's campaign staffer, and Carlos Lucero was the opponent in the election. I talked to Carlos Lucero's campaign staffer, and he said, Bill Armstrong is pro-abortion, and Carlos Lucero is pro-life. Well, my jaw nearly dropped off my face. That wasn't just bending the truth. That was an outright, bald-faced lie. And I said, sir, there's no one in the United States Senate more pro-life than Bill Armstrong. And I can assure you, Carlos Lucero is not pro-life. I don't know who you talked to on his campaign, but they told you a bald-faced lie. I suggest you go out there and do a little bit of research, and you'll find out that I'm telling you the truth. But, you know, so what did the guy do? The guy was gullible on the front end, but what did he do right? He didn't stop with calling one candidate. He called both candidates and heard from both candidates what was going on. And that was his way of drilling down and finding the truth. The other thing you can do is invite these candidates to come to your home for an event in your home. Put on an event in your home. Ask your friends and neighbors to come. Ask the candidate to come and talk. Candidates want to come and get in front of real people and present their case. Ask them to come. Host an event for them. It's a great way to get to know them and to really be able to ask straightforward questions.
That's a great idea because they want to get exposure.
And yeah,
plus,
they do.
These are good local food
candidates. They can do this.
Right, and there'll be great food involved. All right. So there's one more group I think we need to ask about. Many states put judges on the ballot. For Supreme Court, I know Minnesota was Supreme Court. Most judges are nearly impossible to figure out unless you're a case law expert. Where do you start?
Well, I mean, that is the hardest group to deal with every time. However, there are some tools out there oftentimes that'll help. There can be endorsements or ratings from activist groups. Go look at activist groups that are kind of involved in more legal. See what ratings they've given them. Sometimes you'll find them, sometimes you won't. Again, go to iVoter Guide. Sometimes iVoter Guide will actually rate the judges, which is a big help, but you have to go and check. But then look for different things. Find out if they've ever given to a political candidate. Most of them are smart enough to not to do that, but some of them just aren't that smart. And they've done that somewhere in their past. That gives you an idea of which direction they lean. And if you don't think that influences the way they rule from the bench, you haven't been paying attention in recent years. Also, you know, most newspapers will actually interview judges who are candidates for office. They'll do the interviews and then they'll publish them online. Go and listen to those. Listen to them once, twice, three times until you feel like you have a good sense. And if you listen to it more than once, the second or third times going through, you'll probably start picking up on some things you didn't catch the first time and go, oh, I didn't. That's significant. But you got to really listen. You got to take the time to do that. Another thing you look for, have they ever been paid by a network to be a legal analyst for that network? Because most networks now are kind of tend to be liberal or conservative. So the networks will tend to hire legal analysts that will present their point of view. So that kind of gives you an idea too. And now here's some very practical things. And some of you are probably going to laugh, but I do it. If both choices are bad, and I'm looking at judges, and I say both choices are bad, who am I going to vote for? Here's the first thing I do. I say, well, which one's older? Is one significantly older than the other? If he is, I vote for the older one. You know why? He's going to die sooner. Is that kind of hardcore? Well, it's true. He's going to be in that office a shorter period of time, and he'll have less opportunity to do damage and less opportunity to advance up the chain. And I ask another question. Does one of them seem significantly smarter than the other? If that's the case, I usually vote for the dumber one. Because again, the dumber they are, the less ability they'll have to do any real damage to the system. So it's just being very, very practical. I look for clues like that, and I use common sense. And I think most of you out there have a good dose of common sense. So just ask some common sense questions and go forward.
And you kind of sneak peeked the final segment of today's show, but you know we're going to end our conversation today talking about how to choose between two bad candidates. Besides flipping a coin, there's some other practical things you can do. And Brad just gave you one of those things. You're listening to the God is Issue podcast with Brad Bright. We're talking about how to vote wisely. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Brad Bright travels the country speaking and training people how to make God the issue in every issue. Go to brightmedia.org, that's brightmedia.org, to find out how you can bring Brad's highly interactive workshop to your area. It's fun, engaging, and most important, it will help make you more effective in making God the issue in every issue. Go to brightmedia.org, that's brightmedia.org, and schedule Brad today.
Welcome back to the God is the Issue podcast with Brad Bright as we talk about how to vote wisely, part two. In the first part of this series, of course, we talked about the six voting criteria that you should consider when looking at candidates. And in this podcast, we've been focusing on job description and how do you choose your candidate based on the job they're applying for. And Brad, we've gone through that in detail, and we kind of hinted at this at the end of segment two. But I've got one question I really want you to expound upon. What do you do when you have to choose between two really bad candidates?
I've been there and done that one. Well, really, you have three choices. Either you don't vote, you vote for a third party candidate, or you vote for the lesser of two evils. Those are the three choices. Now, then, of the first one of not voting, as a steward of the vote God gave me, it's not an option for me to bury my vote. I'm not going to bury my vote because I'm a steward of my vote. And God says I should invest as a good steward everything he gives me. So I'm going to invest it. You know, Matthew chapter 25 calls stewards who bury what the master gives them, calls them wicked servants. So that's just not an option. I am going to vote every single time unless I'm sick or something. Or I literally can't vote. So option one, not voting, not an option. So it leaves us two options, right? Either voting for a third-party candidate, you know, a protest vote. I could do a write-in vote. Or choosing between the two worst. Now, voting for a third-party candidate or write-in vote really isn't an option for me either, since typically when you vote for a third-party candidate or you do a write-in vote, it typically benefits one or the other two major candidates in the race. So, in effect, you're still benefiting them. For me, it's not an option to cast a protest vote 9 times out of 10. So that means I have to make the tough call and vote for one of the two leading candidates. Now, that is, if I'm going to invest my vote wisely. So typically, I have to vote for one of the lesser of the two evils. So that's the third option in my mind. And for me, most of the time, that is really the only viable option as a steward of the vote God gave me. So in that case, here's what I do. I say, Brad, before God, what are my top priorities? And for me, I've come to the conviction that my top priority is voting to support religious freedom in this country. See, I believe all of our other rights in the Constitution are based on freedom of religion. I think that's why the founders put freedom of religion first before any of our other rights in the Bill of Rights. If religion falls, if religious freedom falls, all the other rights will follow it. Therefore, when it comes to the president and the Senate races, I vote for the candidate who I believe is most likely to put judges on the courts who are going to protect religious freedom. So that's what I factor first, because that's my top priority. So you need to determine what your top priority is. My second priority is protecting the unborn. As a follower of Jesus, I believe that's my obligation, because they're the most vulnerable of anyone in our society. They literally can't speak for themselves. They literally cannot defend themselves in any way, shape, or form. Therefore, if religious freedom is not strongly in play, that's my second priority, my second criteria. But in effect, on all these things, I vote with my Bible open. And that has impact on a lot of the issues. Mm-hmm. If the Bible says something is wrong, I vote accordingly. If the Bible says something is good, I vote accordingly. So using those criteria, most of the federal and state races really become pretty clear cut once I know what my priorities are. Now, then some of the local races aren't always as clear cut, because those aren't issues in many of those races, but many of them are. But here's the bottom line. You need to decide what your top priorities are and then vote accordingly. But first, decide what your priorities are.
All right, really quick, as we close out this show today, talking about, we got ballot initiatives, because there's always, you know, living in Florida the last 20 years, there's always two or three pages of ballot initiatives after you vote for the candidates. What advice do you have on those?
Well, obviously, you want to read them carefully. I mean, if you're not going to read them carefully, then you're not doing your basic due diligence as a steward, are you, of voting wisely? But then I ask the question, now, what will this really do? Is it going to do what they say it's going to do, or is there a poison pill in this bill somewhere? And I ask those questions. But to find that out, I ask other follow-up questions. Who supports it? Why do they support it? Who opposes it? Why do they oppose it? Who put it on the ballot in the first place? That's going to tell me about a lot of reasons about what the real agenda is, and ask the question, why do I believe they put it on the ballot? They may say one thing, but as a shrewd voter, as a shrewd steward, I need to be asking the question, are they telling me the truth or not? If they're telling me the truth, what are some of the other practical effects that this ballot initiative may have? So pretty straightforward, just takes a little bit of work.
Any final words of advice on how to vote wisely before we bring this two-part series to an end?
Yes, and this one is critical. Absolutely critical, because I know a lot of you are now saying, after you've listened to this, I don't have time to do all that. Did any of you say that? I bet you a lot of you have. I don't have time to apply these criteria to every candidate. And you know what? Unless you're retired or you're a political analyst, you're correct. You don't have time. So here is my final piece of advice to you, and it's going to save you. Go find 5 or 10 people who are like-minded to join with you. You know, your church might be a good place to start looking for these people. And then each of you take 2 candidates or ballot initiatives and thoroughly research them. Thoroughly research them. Then you do a written report on each candidate, and you give it to the rest of the group. And again, your goal is not to tell your friends how to vote. Your goal is to give them the best information you can possibly find on who these people are. Do that written report and look at the scripture in the process. Send it out to everyone in your group, and then everybody get together to discuss each candidate. You can ask each other questions. I'll tell you what, if you do that, now you'll be able to vote wisely without having to invest time, frankly, that almost none of us have to invest, by working together with others to really dig in who these candidates are. But again, your primary goal on this is not to tell your friends how to vote. It's to give them good information so they can vote wisely, vote based upon what the Bible says. And by the way, Your seven duties as a Christian citizen that I mentioned at the end of the last podcast will be a big help in helping you put together one of these groups and how to structure it to really help you vote wisely.
All right, where did,
as a good, go on.
Where did they get that book? Your book. You mentioned that in the last podcast. Where did they get your book?
Yeah, Your Seven Duties as a Christian Citizen. You can get it at brightmedia.org. It's a booklet. It's a really quick read. And it's very practical. It's going to help you as you evaluate candidates and issues and how to vote. Specifically, how to put together one of these groups to evaluate all of this and how you can use those groups to help further educate yourself on issues. Here's the point, Jim. As a good steward, we have to invest what God has given us.
Right.
We are to invest it wisely. So as a good steward, you have to invest your God-given vote. You never bury it. You never bury it. We're called to invest. Matthew 25 is very, very clear about that. And it's clear about what God thinks of stewards who bury their vote. I don't want God to think that of me. I want him to call me a faithful steward.
Get a copy of Your Seven Duties as a Christian Citizen online at brightmedia.org. And remember to check out all the other resources when you're out there. Thank you, Brad Bright, for bringing us this incredible conversation on how to vote wisely. It's been a great conversation. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Brad.
Jim, thank you much.
And remember, always be kind, compassionate, and shrewd, especially when talking about politics, while making God the issue in every issue.